Welcome back to HealthLink On Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. I'm Linda Cohen, along here with Dr. Ken Bottles, medical technology guru, and we are talking about all of the changes coming down the pike with regard to healthcare delivery and how we can improve our healthcare and the efficiencies that are required. We were talking about the point that doctors have to change. Well, one of the biggest ways that I think we all have to change is to become more comfortable with all of the technology that's now at our fingertips. And as you said, unless you're of the maybe in your 20s, you didn't grow up with the kind of technology that's now available. So we have a whole system of people who are working with patients who really don't have that experience or expertise. And yet, this type of technology is really at the forefront of how we can affect efficiencies. Now, you alluded in the earlier in this interview to using the smartphone and the various apps, as we call them, that can be downloaded. Let's talk more about that. What kinds of things really do you think could be helpful to a patient? What kinds of tools do we have today that could be helpful to patients?
Well, I think that there's a lot of applications that are out there. And I think I mentioned that 10 billion have been downloaded from the Apple Store. But the ones that I'm interested in and have been looking at in terms of smartphone apps is there's a whole bunch of apps around losing weight and obesity. So there's, your smartphone, whether you realize it or not, has a GPS and a motion sensor. You can have an app that turns your smartphone into a great pedometer right there. So the idea is what's happening is that everything is going to be in your smartphone. There will be no more laptop computers. I didn't bring a laptop when I flew up here yesterday. I just brought my smartphone. And so one thing is there's a whole bunch of things around exercise where there's apps where you can keep track of how many times you exercise and how many calories there are and everything. So that's one thing. I used to work on the 12th floor of an office building in Minneapolis. I could, with a smartphone app, figure out how many pounds I would lose if I used the stairs every day, twice a day. So that's kind of interesting. It's also, when say I'm in the market and I'm worried about salt. That just came out yesterday. I know this is Salt City, so sorry.
Not but, that we eat, though. We put it on the streets.
But salt is supposed to be bad for you. So they just came out with new dietary guidelines that you should have less salt. Well, I can, if I'm shopping for a new product, can use the barcode to augment onto my smartphone how much salt is in the stuff I'm going to buy. I'm going to buy a new product. That's pretty interesting. There are smartphone applications for diabetics. So the smartphone can become a very useful glucometer or a way to store all of your blood sugar levels. There's actually a sleep hygiene smartphone application that's one of the most popular in the Apple Store. So I really think there's lots of things. If you think about, we have to lose weight, we have to exercise more, we have to eat more intelligently, that the smartphone can be really, really useful. And what this really is, this gets to Web 3.0, which is augmented reality. Augmented reality means that with your smartphone, you can suddenly take all the information that's available on the web and have it wherever you are with your smartphone. There's a company called Layar, L-A-Y-A-R, which is in Holland. If you take a picture of a building in Holland with your smartphone, it suddenly identifies for you the name of the building, will tell you how many apartments are in that building, which ones are open, and you hit a thing, you can talk about renting the 4-bedroom apartment. Mm. That's a mashup. And if you think about, well, how could we use a mashup of everything that's known for healthcare into your smartphone? And so the idea is the doctor or the patient, right at the time when they're buying the product in the grocery store, or right at the time when the doctor's prescribing the antibiotic, has the latest, greatest scientific medicine from the mashup of everything on the web that's delivered to him in real time so that he or she can order the right antibiotic for you.
Yes, so they can have Hippocrates or
up to date,
all sure. of that stuff readily available. So those are wonderful, wonderful breakthroughs. The question that comes to mind, the pitfall to my mind is, how can we vet this information? We really need to know, especially a layperson really needs to know that the information that they're receiving has been vetted and that it is credible.
It's a really interesting question. And there was a lot of controversy when Wikipedia first came out that, well, Encyclopedia Britannica was better because it was written by experts. But then there was an interesting study which showed that the Encyclopedia Britannica had about the same level of errors as Wikipedia. that even when the experts write it, that errors creep in for whatever reason. But the interesting thing about Wikipedia was the errors that come into Wikipedia are usually fixed because so many people are upgrading it all the time, and the errors that creep into Encyclopedia Britannica don't get fixed till the next edition. So let's be clear. There's never been totally vetted, perfect truth. If you've discovered that, Linda, please send me an email because it would be nice to have. And so, think about it, that there are mistakes done everything. But you're right. There's a lot of misinformation on the internet.
So we have to be educated consumers. Or
we have to be very skeptical, educated consumers, but also about the medical breakthroughs that are put out in JAMA or in the New England Journal of Medicine.
I know.
There was a fascinating article by that Greek fella who said, you know, these medical breakthroughs, almost half of them were overturned within 5 years. Well, why is that? That's because medical journal, even peer-reviewed journals, don't publish negative findings. They only publish positive findings. So we have these associations. Coffee causes pancreatic cancer. Coffee doesn't cause pancreatic cancer. And until it gets all sorted out in the medical literature, it's really hard to know. So yes, we all have to be very skeptical consumers of medical information.
I think that's a very key point that you're making. And also, we don't know who's underwriting research sometimes in terms of whether there's any kind of an interest promoting the certain results.
Well, we're just now discovering. And one thing I can tell you is transparency is not going away. And so you have ProPublica now publishing on their website all of the payments from drug companies to doctors, and it turns out that some of the doctors hadn't told their deans they were getting these, and they were in violation of their conflict of interest rules. That's interesting. No one ever knew about that before because there wasn't the transparency of the internet. I mean, the internet really changes everything.
It does, absolutely. And we're witnessing it as we speak with world-changing events. I mean, it is amazing.
So you can say that's challenging and that rocks my world and I'm upset. Or you can say, boy, that's interesting. Can I better use those technological tools to take better care of patients? Because we're not perfect right now. I would like to say the latter rather than the former. I'd like to be optimistic that maybe it's great if a patient can use a smartphone as a pedometer and lose some weight.
I think that's fabulous. Let me turn to another subject, and that has to do with electronic medical records. It seems to me that that is going to be potentially a tremendous not only a cost saving, but an efficiency in terms of nationwide care, in terms of being able to have these health information networks where if you're a patient in Syracuse and you're in New Mexico and you should have a cardiac incident, they can pull all your records up in New Mexico. And that's a goal, it seems to me.
Right. Easy to say, hard to do. The Obama administration is putting billions of dollars through ONC into getting everybody an electronic medical record. Ultimately, great idea. And I think it's a great idea because it will allow us to decrease per capita cost and increase quality. The problem is, just like with everything we do, we overemphasize the hype about how fast that's going to happen, and we underemphasize how important. 10 years ago, we did the genome. It's been 10 years, and we haven't got personalized medicine yet, right? We only have Gleevec and Herceptin,
right?
A couple of drugs. Okay. And so by now, we all predicted that we'd all have personalized medicine, know the genes that caused every asthma or diabetes. It's been more complicated than that. So what I worry about is that HIT is very useful. We have to do it. But there's a long learning curve that physicians are less efficient for a long time till they understand how to use it. And the other thing is, it's not perfect, that it introduces a whole new set of errors because now we're using the computer. So it's like, I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to be transformative, but it's not going to happen as fast as everybody's saying it is. And I worry about that we're using these, you know, system-wide kind of platforms where I think perhaps everyone's going to have their personal health record on their smartphone. And so I worry about that we may be wasting some money investing in these system-wide large systems of HIT. But yes, it'll be very useful.
Well, you also have the issue of compatibility. And that's something that I think is a great challenge, to have a nationwide system that is compatible, that can talk to each other.
Yeah, and Americans aren't so happy about having a nationwide system of anything.
there's a lot of paranoia there.
There's a lot of paranoia, and you see that out there. I was in the hotel this morning, and It sounds like somebody's trying to, there was an ad I saw in New York saying, it was a woman grocery shopping and she was saying, I don't want the government telling me what to buy in my grocery basket. Well, that, I think right there, shows you the partisanship of some of us don't want the government telling us anything, but others of us want the government to have a safety net. And boy, don't take away my Social Security or my Medicare. So we are kind of schizophrenic as a people.
Absolutely.
Saying, let's get rid of the deficit, but don't touch Medicare. I mean, so you know,
or to don't me, touch taxes.
Right. And yeah, so do all those things, but never raise taxes.
Right.
So, you know, if you know how to do that, Linda, again, send me an email.
All right, I'll remember that. Two other very quick things I want to try to cover, and that is this whole very interesting area of using robots. Yeah. And the whole virtual reality issue. But let's start with the robots. I have some personal experience. I have a kid training in medicine in Boston, and I know for a fact that at the Boston VA, they have robots delivering meds to patients.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. I mean, if you think about it, we have a primary care shortage. We have all these baby boomers like me retiring. We're not going to have enough primary care. And so there are some people in Boston, Dr. Kevdar is probably the leading expert at the Connected Health Institute at Partners, who is saying, we're going to now have robots that are like people. And this is a little hard for most of us to get our arms around. But they claim that they've had a study where for discharge planning, real patients in Boston preferred the robot to the woman nurse
that is
explaining discharge planning.
I'm sorry.
And, but if you think about it, it does make some sense in the sense that the patient said, hey, the robot has all the time in the world. The robot didn't get upset when I repeated my question over and over again. And the robot didn't talk down to me. So this is and we can talk forever about this, but I think robots are going to have a larger role than we think about in the future. But it kind of does really rock my world in the sense of I would like to kind of have a person talking to me and feel right. empathy for me.
Well, we do have the mid-level providers who I think are, you know, rising in importance in terms of stepping in to roles to help with the shortage of doctors. So,
oh, absolutely. I think you're going to see more and more nurse practitioners and PAs deliver primary care. Again, Clay Christensen's book, The Innovator's Prescription, talks a lot about you can deliver care if you have an algorithmic rule that you can do it, and that's what they're doing at CVS and other pharmacies where they deliver care through nurse practitioners.
Yeah, that's clearly going to be important, and we're doing that here at Upstate. As a matter of fact, Upstate has an EMR system that's in for its outpatient services that's going to be fully functional in 2011 and hopefully have an inpatient system after that. So we're trying to keep up with all of these changes. Tell me about avatars. There's been some research showing that people can use avatars to actually feel better about themselves. I mean, does it have
sure.
to do with psychiatric issues or...
I
what types
know.
Of
avatars
care?
is a representation of yourself, like on Second Life or in a video game. So there's now some people saying that video games are addictive. People love them, and there's been a little bit of study, mostly out of California, of course, where is if I make an avatar of myself,
makes sense.
I'll have hair, I'll be very muscular, and yet what they've discovered is that if I start to interact with people as an avatar that's more attractive, it actually does then make me more confident and have higher self-esteem in real life. So we're just starting to understand all of this stuff around avatars and Second Life and real life, and it's very confusing.
Very confusing, but also exciting, I think. I mean, I recently heard a story about someone who was housebound and who's developed a whole world using SimCity. And
absolutely.
Somehow it's given her hope. Well, Dr. Kent Bottles, physician, educator, health systems consultant, and obvious visionary, thanks so much for talking to us
Thank
today.
You, Linda.
You've been amazing, and we're very, very excited to hear all that you have to say. We have to take another short break. We'll be right back with more HealthLink on air. So please stay right there. I'm Linda Cohen. This is FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.